Good morning. Thanks for joining us here on KGN News Magazine. It's Tuesday, November 24th, and you're listening to listener-supported community radio. I'm Roz Brown. Coming up on the magazine today, we'll talk to a longtime Boulder advocate for the local homeless community and his reaction to a statement from the city's Human Relations Commission, a volunteer-appointed group that has issued a harsh assessment of the city's current approach to homelessness. Then Boulder's Emergency Response Connectors works to develop creative ways to keep their neighbors informed and provide opportunities for two-way communication between residents and government. We'll have more about that group coming up. Then we'll check out the latest H2O radio newscast, This Week in Water, exploring the question how milk can help capture carbon in our environment. Then it's the weekly KGNU comment line, where listeners share their thoughts about what they hear on the station. At 8:30, How on Earth will be here, KGNU's science show, followed by The Wit and Wisdom of Alan Watts at 9 o'clock, and then a morning of eclectic music starting at 9:30. But first, we'll start with a look at some local and regional headlines. Snow outside and a couple inches of more snow expected in the metro area this morning. Higher amounts in the foothills and mountains today. It is really slushy out there and slippery. And the city of Boulder is on accident alert. So expect a little slow going this morning. Just a lot of very wet snow. The latest update on COVID-19 today, daily hospitalizations for the coronavirus reached an all-time high in Boulder County yesterday as the number of cases topped 10,000. The 157 new cases recorded Monday brought the county to 10,130 cases, and the death toll remains at 115. County data shows there are currently 119 people hospitalized. That's 15 more than Friday's hospitalizations, and it brings a total to 327 hospitalizations to date. And when it comes to hospital beds, county data shows 20% of local hospitals are currently experiencing an intensive care unit bed shortage with 9 beds available. On Monday, Governor Jared Polis signed an executive order allowing at-capacity hospitals to transfer patients and stop admitting new ones to help them respond to a surge in patients across the state. There were 25 of the county's 54 adult critical ventilators in Boulder County hospitals available on Monday, which falls into the yellow zone on the dial. And when it comes to staffing, 60% of county hospitals are either currently experiencing a staffing shortage or expect a shortage in the next week, and all hospitals have sufficient personal protective equipment. COVID-19 has us talking about shutdowns and closures almost daily, but Colorado outdoor enthusiasts can change the narrative on Thanksgiving Day with the opening of the Reuter Hess Incline. KGNU's Steve Miller has more.
Thanksgiving Day will mark the opening of the Reuter Hess Incline Challenge in Parker. The 132-step and 230-foot elevation climb is located next to the still-filling Reuter Hess Reservoir. There is a reservation system to keep crowding to a minimum. Construction on the incline began in June and finished earlier this month. The trailhead is located next to the Reuter Hess Water Purification Facility at 11865 Heirloom Parkway in Parker. The Denver Post reports that the reservoir is part of the Hess Purification Facility in Parker. Mary Colton, Parker's Director of Parks and Recreation, feels that the opening is perfect timing as the operation of gyms and recreation centers in several Colorado counties have fallen into the level red, severe risk category, due to the COVID-19 coronavirus. The Reuter Hess Incline Challenge is the latest outdoor stair-step facility to open in Colorado, following the launch of the 164-step Challenge Hill in Castle Rock's Philip S. Miller Park in 2018. 60 miles to the south in Manitou Springs is the Manitou Incline, located at the base of Pikes Peak. It has more than 2,700 steps with a 2,000-foot elevation gain. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
A virtual debrief of the Left Hand Canyon and Calwood fires is scheduled for Monday, November 30th, to discuss how fire officials are preparing for the next fire season. Local fire professionals and forest managers will provide overviews of both fires. According to Plan Boulder County, they will also discuss fire suppression, weather conditions, evacuations, and preliminary observations on how previously mitigated forest areas responded to the wildfire. Plan officials said the goal of the virtual event is to allow participants to discuss topics and ask questions which are important to them and to learn about existing wildlife-related programs, preparations, and resources in the areas where they live. And again, that event is next Monday. It's online from 4:30 to 6 p.m. The Colorado Oil and Gas Conservation Commission has approved a set of new rules that conservation groups say will help greatly in efforts to protect wildlife from new energy development. Last year, Colorado passed legislation installing paid professional regulators as commissioners, and John Gale, conservation director for Backcountry Hunters and Anglers, says this was the first big test of the new commission. The major changes include requiring new development to be 2,000 feet away from schools or homes and limiting development near waterways and wildlife. Gale says that will increase stream buffers in Colorado by almost 10 times.
For the last 65 years, they've been operating with the stated intent of fostering the oil and gas industry in Colorado. What these rules will usher in is a much needed balance in consideration for things like fish and wildlife.
Gale says energy development isn't off the table in Colorado, but some key resources are too important to risk by allowing drilling or other development nearby. He says it's also crucial to protect migration corridors that big game animals rely on to travel between their winter and summer ranges. Gale says Colorado is home to incredible natural resources and beautiful landscapes that draw people to the state for recreation and quality of life, but some of the same resources also attract energy developers. And he notes that Colorado's waterways feed lower basin states like Arizona as well.
We want to make sure that we're doing our job upstream to ensure that people downstream of us are benefiting from the actions that we take up here too.
Gale says rule changes have long been coming. He hopes future stewards of Colorado's land and natural resources will also take into account the balance between industry, recreation, and conservation. Denver Mayor Michael Hancock is blaming the Denver Public School Board for the departure of school district superintendent Susana Cordova. Hancock and former Mayor Federico Pena called for an independent committee to lead the search process to find Cordova's replacement. The mayor sent out a joint letter Monday claiming the board undermined Cordova and caused her to take a position in Dallas. That according to the Denver Post. Hancock said they mistreated Cordova at public meetings and interfered in the day-to-day management of the school system. And Denver officials have decided to fine short-term rental companies $1,000 each for illegal short-term rental transaction after three fruitless years of negotiating with Airbnb. For the years, the city's short-term rental market has been peppered with outdated and unlicensed listings. And in the weather forecast today, we are looking at cloudy skies and 70% chance of snow flurries, highs about 40 degrees. Now, that snow is going to continue till about 11 o'clock today. Well, again, we'll have a high of 40, low tonight of 26, but it's back to sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 50. And then for Thanksgiving, a possibility of more snow flurries and a high of 42. We have 30 degrees here at the Boulder studio this morning. But again, it's very slippery and slushy out there, so be prepared for a little bit of extra time on your commute this morning. It's 8:12. You're listening to KGNU's Morning Magazine. The City of Boulder's Human Relations Commission has sent a resolution to City Council outlining what they believe isn't working in regard to policies that affect those experiencing homelessness. The resolution, approved unanimously by the volunteer council-appointed group, offers a harsh assessment of the current approach. The resolution claims the city does not provide nearly enough sheltering options for the unhoused, excludes some unhoused individuals from receiving appropriate services, and propagates public relations messages that mislead local citizens as to the nature of the underserved population. I spoke to Lindsay Loberg, who chairs that commission. She says the resolution was passed November 16th and sent to council members over the weekend. She says the city's housing first policy is making progress, but it's not enough.
There are really important strides being made for people getting housed through permanent supportive housing. And so there are definitely benefits. And then the thing that we wanted to communicate is that there are people who are being missed by the services available to them.
Loberg says Boulder's camping ban ordinance is particularly problematic. The ban makes it unlawful for a homeless person to sleep on public property if using a blanket or any other protection from the elements other than their clothing.
With the camping ban itself being particularly problematic, while there aren't services that can realistically be used by everyone, where, you know, like you can't, for an individual, can't use a particular service and then are also prohibited from essentially sheltering yourself by a local law.
Loberg says a resolution also states that the city has not adequately pursued options for the unhoused, such as tiny homes, safe parking, and sanctioned encampments.
The thing is, there's no single solution that can address this issue. And I think like a healthy approach would be to try to implement all of the possible mitigations that make sense in Boulder. And HRC, the Human Relations Commission, along with the Housing Advisory Board, back in July, made a set of like recommendations that you named to explore. And since then, a working group has done a lot of research around those possibilities. And there are advocacy groups that have been doing similar research into the viability of those things. And I think where we're at right now is that there are a lot of things that like at least are promising. And the request, I think, as it stands for the city, is to look into those things further and to implement as many of them as are possible.
Darren O'Connell is a Boulder attorney and longtime advocate for the local homeless community. He submitted a guest opinion to the Daily Camera on Sunday, noting that the HRC is right to sound the alarm about possible human rights violations by the city.
It was a very bold move by the Human Relations Commission to pass this resolution, and they did so unanimously, which really should send a message to the city that the lack of data and the sort of misleading information that the city puts out to the community to try and paint a picture of Boulder doing everything that's needed to address homelessness, this resolution just really lets the city know that people who are paying attention can see through the obfuscation. And those would be strong words, but I think when you look at this resolution and see what the Human Relations Commission is saying that they see the city doing, you know, this really cements a lot of what I've witnessed. And so this is a, you know, independent and objective group who started looking into human rights issues around homelessness, and they decided that they couldn't be silent. So because it wasn't reaching the media after it happened, I decided that it needed to be shared and wrote that guest opinion. City staff and city council, they know these things to be true. The way this may move the needle is that when your own commission, Human Relations Commission, feels that it is such a human rights violation that they have to call it out, one would hope that it would be a wake-up call for the members of City Council that have so far been willing to propagate the messaging that everything is fine, no need to look any deeper. One would hope that they'll start to look deeper, or at least recognize that others are looking deeper and that the truth is being heard within the community.
Again, that was Darren O'Connell, Boulder attorney and longtime advocate for the homeless. It's not clear when the City Council might address the resolution that was passed by the Human Relations Commission. It's 8:17. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. The Emergency Response Connectors Program of the City of Boulder provides information to educate about community resources and document concerns and issues raised by the community. Rosanna Longo spoke with Luz Galicia, Emergency Response Connector, housing organizer with 9 to 5 Colorado, and mobile home advocate about what is being done to provide adequate resources and support to vulnerable populations in the City of Boulder, specifically affected by the pandemic.
Emergency Response Connector, we brainstorm once a week. We have two different sessions, and we get an update of the latest news in COVID-19 for the City of Boulder. So before it goes to the public, we know what are going to be the restrictions that they're going to have, or what are the good things, such as free places where they get tests. The nurse, we have a telephone number that is being delivered to residents. The nurses speak bilingual, that they're 24 hours a day, where if you feel like you get infected, you can call them, and they will answer right away, and they will tell you questionnaire, and you tell them the symptoms, and they will direct you to where you want to go.
I'm speaking with Luz Galicia. She's with 9 to 5, but also with the City of Boulder. And we are talking about the Emergency Response Connectors Program.
The Emergency Response Connector is collaborating with another nonprofit organization, like a Boulder Food Rescue, that is helping right now to only for the people that I know that I'm working in the community, for more than 45 people providing groceries for a week that we deliver to the houses, because these people, these people that they cannot go out, and we deliver to them. People helping people, farmers, that instead of just throwing away the extra food, they call through the Boulder Food Rescue and they offer some help veggies, and those veggies, we pick them up and we deliver to alternated communities. Also, their food pantries that we've been building into the mobile home communities where I work, where we restock this every week for people, residents that they don't have enough money to buy food. Also, we have restaurants, for example, they donate food. I give you the last example. We have a donation of 300 prepared meals for residents. So once again, the emergency response connector, with the talent of everyone, we bring in all the resources inside. Another big resource that we got is the EFA, is providing rent assistance. They're providing medical assistance for residents. They provide some money to fix your car, to buy you glasses, to buy you medicine. In the case of the mobile homes, they provide some help to buy the heater, the furniture, to be prepared for the winter. So this is such a great opportunity for residents. One of the things that we experience as emergency response connectors is the fear of residents, specifically the Hispanic community, that they're afraid to ask and request these services. We have a big amount of people who speak Spanish in the connectors that we motivate and encourage the residents to don't be afraid, because the money is there, and we want to just extend to them that they don't need to be afraid to ask for this help.
The key component of these emergency connectors is that they are people that come from within the community, that they are part of the community. And you have pointed out something important, that it is not easy for our Latino community to request these services. They either because they don't feel entitled, or it's because they are afraid that they will be asked for documentation when they request those services, especially because of families in need and families that will come together in small groups, but they still, this idea of the coming together that is so nice when we talk about Thanksgiving, the act of giving and receiving. Is there a phone number, or how can people get connected? If you can also make like an announcement short in Spanish.
Rosanna, even better, I'm going to give you my cellular phone number. 720-480-5025, because I know that when my community, Hispanic people, listen to this, they're going to call me like they did the last time, and I was able to help a lot of people. So once again, 720-480-5025, and this is for the community, Hispanic community, that I want them to call, because the resources around, that they belong to all of you guys. La ciudad de Boulder tiene un grupo de conectores de emergencia de respuesta para toda nuestra comunidad hispana. Este servicio provee de recursos para todos nosotros para ayudarnos a sobrepasar y salir adelante en esta terrible pandemia del COVID-19, y podemos proveer de recursos de maneras de poderles ayudar a todos ustedes para que puedan salir adelante en esta. Y no solamente a un cierto grupo de gente, a los niños, a los adultos, a los abuelitos, a los tíos, a los compadres. So yo los invito y que asistan a estos entrenamientos, clases que tenemos nosotros, para que ustedes puedan entender y llevar un poquito más agradable este periodo que es muy difícil. So, Rosanna, comparto mi teléfono contigo para que nuestra gente se comunique conmigo y yo los pueda dirigir a donde ellos necesiten ir. Es 720-480-5025.
Thank you so much. Muchísimas gracias, Luz Galicia. Como siempre, es un verdadero placer. For KGNU, I am Rosanna Longo.
and it's 8:24 at KGNU. In the latest newscast from this week in water, H2O Radio tells us no one needs to cry over spilled milk.
How milk can capture carbon. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report.
I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
The Salton Sea, a large lake in the Southern California desert, is in one of the state's poorest counties, but its fortunes could be changing.
That's because hot water trapped in the basin contains one of the world's biggest deposits of lithium, the mineral in high demand for electric car batteries.
Bloomberg reports that most lithium currently comes from Australia, China, and South America, and the U.S. wants its own supply.
The Salton Sea is home to 11 geothermal plants that convert hot groundwater into electricity. The idea is to take lithium out of the water and then pump the brine back underground.
Some are even calling the area Lithium Valley. And state officials say mining the mineral could make the U.S. a force in the battery industry, dominated now by China.
Enthusiasts envision auto manufacturing plants moving to the area to make electric vehicles, creating thousands of jobs where there was up to 20% unemployment before the pandemic.
California Governor Gavin Newsom signed a bill in September to set up a commission to study the feasibility of lithium mining around the Salton Sea.
President-elect Biden may try to hit the delete button on the Trump administration's rules and rollbacks that affected drinking water and streams across the country. But undoing them may not be as simple as a keystroke.
E&E News reports that one of the biggest challenges is the continuing battle over what bodies of water are protected under federal law.
Obama sought to expand coverage, but Trump issued a new rule withdrawing much of the country's streams and wetlands from protection.
Biden may try to navigate between the two approaches to craft a rule that will last after it eventually ends up before the Supreme Court.
Another issue is the permitting process for major pipelines like the Keystone XL that was shortened by the Trump administration. Biden may require more detailed screening of applications seeking to dredge and fill waterways.
With regard to drinking water, the Biden team will need to consider new standards for lead pipes, including the amount of time utilities have to replace them and how schools should monitor toxin levels.
Last, the Washington Post reports Trump's Energy Department may soon change the definition of a showerhead to allow more water to flow, and it may exempt some washing machines from energy efficiency requirements.
From August to October in Thailand, there's a parade along a river each night that draws crowds of tourists. But instead of watching floats and marching bands, they're armed with flashlights to see walking shrimp.
The shrimp stop swimming at dusk and climb out of the water and move along the shore. A researcher from UCLA realized no one knew why the shrimp leave the safety of the water or where they're going.
The New York Times reports that the grad student set up cameras and recorded the shrimp walking 65 feet upstream, some staying out of the water for 10 minutes or more.
The crustaceans stay in the river's splash zone, which may wet their gills so they can keep taking in oxygen.
He and his team of researchers concluded that young shrimp probably leave the river when the flow becomes too strong. Larger adults can handle the current without washing away.
The walk is dangerous for the shrimp because they can only survive briefly on land, and predators including snakes, frogs, and large spiders lurk nearby. Yet, most return successfully to the river.
Dairies produce a lot of extra milk that they have to dump, but now scientists have found that they can use the excess to capture carbon dioxide coming from power plants that burn fossil fuels.
Researchers at Clarkson University explain how powdered milk can be made into a substance that scrubs CO2 much better than current methods.
CO2 scrubbing is a form of carbon capture that takes place after fossil fuels have been combusted, but before the exhaust is released into the air. The use of waste milk as a carbon scrubber could be a boost for the dairy industry.
Although milk consumption has declined more than 30% since 1980, there has been an increase in its production, creating an oversupply. Farmers now dispose of more than 50 million gallons annually.
Also, cows burp a lot of methane, another greenhouse gas, so using their milk to capture CO2 would help offset their emissions.
The researchers say that these milk-derived carbon scrubbers could also be used in other applications, like indoor air purification or water treatment. And finally this week, mushrooms. They're a low-calorie food packed with tons of essential vitamins and minerals, and they've been shown to have anti-inflammatory effects that can improve the immune system.
But cultivating mushrooms creates a lot of waste. For every kilo produced, about 3 kilos of straw, manure, and peat used to grow the fungi is left behind.
That waste contains a lot of water, which makes it heavy and expensive to transport as compost, so the vast majority ends up in land.
But one person's trash is another's treasure. Researchers are finding ways to convert the waste into valuable products like food, cosmetics, and bioplastics.
A team with the Fungus Chain Project has been experimenting with methods to extract antioxidants, carbohydrates, and proteins that could be used to make foods like veggie burgers.
They're also developing a line of cosmetics using chitin extracted from the cell walls of mushrooms to make creams.
Not only will their upcycled products reduce the amount sent to landfills by 40%, they say much of what's left over can be used to make organic fertilizers or produce biogas, which makes mushroom cultivation a perfect model for a circular economy.
We'll circle back next week with more water news, but until then, don't let a golden opportunity go to waste. Now through December 31st, gifts to H2O Radio will be doubled. Go to h2oradio.org to donate, and thank you.
And H2O Radio, produced out of Denver, thank you for that this morning. And let's take a quick listen to the comment line.
This is Michelle Swenson. COVID-19 magnifies U.S. social and economic inequities. The same conditions that set the stage for a racist demagogue like Donald Trump. Neoliberal economics has resulted in 45 years of wealth transfer upward and wage suppression. A recent RAND Corporation report reveals that the bottom 90% of the population has been deprived of participation in $50 trillion of economic growth over 5 decades, most wealth captured by the top 1%. The Trump presidency represents the height of a half century of efforts by the ideological right to deconstruct democracy, to disenfranchise and disempower the people. Corporate money has captured both major political parties and is at the root of the deconstruction of democracy. Instead of serving the people, Washington is serving big money, the corporate bottom line. U.S. elections continue to be reported like horse races instead of focusing on issues. If we fail to address the issues that have created social and economic inequities, there will be more racist demagogues like Trump.
And if you would like to give us a comment here on KGNU's comment line, that number is 303-447-9911, and we play them back every Tuesday about this time.